All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Listening to Nasty Knuckles, the Hockey Outlaws podcast, with your hosts, Derek Nasty Settemeyer and former Philadelphia Flyer enforcer, Riley Cote, as they go behind the scenes with your favorite NHL players. Time to face off.
All right, welcome back. What is happening, Nasty?
What's up, Riggs? Not much, buddy. Just got back late night last night.
Yeah.
Fans of Philly.
Looking a little sleepy.
Never. Maybe a little tired.
A little tired.
Fans of Philly went last night with the group. It was a good time. Wasn't the outcome, obviously. We were looking for dropped the game 4-1.
Yeah.
Cool building.
Yeah, was it?
Yeah, big building. It was pretty neat. Got to walk around, looked around. It was a cool building. So
Islanders all jacked up for.
Place was it was a good
bottom of the barrel game, you know.
It was. It looked like it was going to go either way, and then Brock Nelson just put a laser beam.
Oh, yeah.
Whew, that thing was in and out of the net, but Jonesy was kind of screened on the play. But anyway, the outcome was not what we were looking for, obviously. But again, Joe with Fans of Philly, like, just unbelievable time.
Yeah.
The way he sets the trips up. That's so much fun, man.
Wish I could have joined you.
Yeah, I know you had daddy duty.
Had the Rugrats, yep.
So,
We
did it without you.
I know you did.
But we didn't bring the dubs like we did in Arizona.
0-8 in the last eight. It's happening, Nasty.
Yeah, it's not where we want to be right now. It's not been pretty, and we're 13 points back from a wild card. It's not looking great. I will never say it's over. I never did before.
Can't. There's always hope.
Can't do it. Our good buddy Prongs.
Prong Daddy.
What happened?
crushing beers in front of the fans and having some fun. No, he was jersey retirement there in St. Louis, and
congratulations!
What a beauty the beast is.
Yeah.
He's a funny dude, and of course he finds ways to get the crowd rocking. So
yeah, that's awesome.
No props to him. Obviously, amazing career, and nice to see him. And some pictures that I saw with a couple of the St. Louis alumni guys floating around there. So
there was probably a few beers put back last night, I would imagine, with that crew.
Oh, yeah.
But congrats, Boo,
Daddy,
as he calls me. Yeah, the beast. That's awesome, man. Quick little thought. Danny B Danny Briere, our good buddy, did not get the job in Montreal. What are your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, you know what? I don't know this Kent Hughes, but I do know Danny B, and I just feel like he's destined to be the general manager of the Flyers at some point. So I'm happy in the sense that that still could be a reality. But obviously, for Danny B going back to Montreal and being the general manager, probably a dream as well. Who knows? Yeah. It is what it is. There's a lot of competition for those jobs, and I think Danny's in a great spot. There's no rushing that progress. So
he's done a hell of a job in Maine with the team that he runs with the East Coast League. At some point, Danny's going to be an NHL, whether it's here or somewhere else, but he will be running a team. Yeah. And I would put my trust in him.
100%, sure.
Knows the game, and he's a fiery guy, competitor, hates to lose. No one likes to lose, but I can see him with a job soon.
And I consider Danny be a young enough guy that's still played in the era of old school, see the new school, understands the minds of the old school guys and, the new school type of teachers. So I think he'd be a good fit whenever his time comes. So, wish him the best and continued success with his job with player development as well. He's doing some of that. He's on the bench there today with Lappy. His time will come for sure.
Yeah.
All right, Nas, this episode is presented to you by Curaleaf, a medical marijuana dispensary, 12 locations in Pennsylvania. Extremely thoughtful, knowledgeable staff, help you with all your medical marijuana needs. Check them out. I know you're a supporter, Nas, right?
Yes, definitely. They're the best.
All right, check them out, Curaleaf.com. Episode 58, let's go.
Let's go.
Welcome back. I'm Riley Cote.
And I'm Derek Settlemyer. And this week, we are pleased to have one of my favorite people in hockey. Known him for a long time, good buddy, assistant coach of the St. Louis Blues, my main man, Monte Jim Montgomery. Monty, what's up, brother?
Nothing, man. Nasty. Thanks for having me on. Riley, thank you.
Oh, man.
Appreciate you.
Yeah, appreciate you taking the time, man. I know you guys are busy. Chiefs probably just in there, like, with the whip, making you guys work on days off and stuff. just kidding. But, man, you guys got a good team there in St. Louis. How's it going?
It's going really well, I think Doug Armstrong did a great job in the off season, and then Chief is a wonderful man, first of all, to work for. He's a great boss. He pushes you to be better, and at the same time, he gives you a lot of movement to do what you want in your respective areas. And our staff is a real cohesive unit, and we've got a great captain Ryan O'Reilly, and the assistants under him, and we got a couple of outstanding young players. So it's a really fun team to work with. We can score a lot of goals, and they're committed to working on the right side of the puck too. So right now, it's a lot of fun coming in rank this entire season.
Yeah, you're one of my favorite teams to watch. Like I'm a nerd. I watch hockey all night, every day, and with you there, and obviously Chief and Braden Shen, a couple of the guys I do know. You're one of my favorite teams to watch, and you're right, boy. Can you guys put some goals up? This Jordan Kyrou, what a player, man.
Yeah, he's outstanding. We're lucky. We got him and Robbie Thomas as two young players to join a nucleus led by O'Reilly and Chen and Perron. And then you have, we have a great Russian line with the star Tarasenko, and then Barbashev and Buchnevich. People don't know as well, but they're studs.
Yeah. Yeah, they really complement each other. I was talking to Chief the other day, and he was saying, like, when they're together, boy, and they're buzzing, they're tough to stop.
Yeah, they kind of remind us a lot of, the Detroit line when they had Kozlov with Fedorov and Larionov.
They did all right.
Yeah, I know, not bad.
They did all
right. Hopefully we can do the same.
Exactly. Exactly, man. Oh, that's great.
And you have a pretty solid coaching staff there, and you'd been previously a head coach and coming to St. Louis as an assistant. How has your role been defined there in St. Louis, and is it different than your previous jobs as an assistant?
Yeah, it's a little bit different. My previous jobs as an assistant were in college, and there your job is more recruiting, bringing in talent, getting on the road, and then you help out in practice when you can. Here, Chief has given me the responsibility of running our penalty kill, and you know, working with the forwards along with Steve Ott, who runs their power play, and combined with Mike Van Ryan and our goaltending coach David Alexander and our video coach Sean Farrell. We work collectively together. We have a lot of crossover. If we see something, like if Steve Ott sees something that a power play has done well, he'll let me know about it, and vice versa. Yeah. And I think we're very fortunate to have Chief as our leader. Like, here's a guy that holds people accountable, but he does it in a professional manner, despite the fact that he's intimidating. You know,
yeah.
And you see him walk, man. He's like a silverback. Yeah.
Instant street cred, right? With that walk.
Monty, yeah, do you see this, Monty? Every day.
Toughest guy in the building, right?
You understand how tough I am? I will knock anybody out in that locker room. Just tell them. But I always kid around, like, I could. It's got to be so much fun to work there. Like, I know you so well, and Chief's such a fun guy to be around too. And Otter, boy, he's a lippy dude. Like, it would just be, that would be my kind of place to be, just guys lipping off all the time. But you guys do a great job, work very hard, like you said. And you can see it. Your players are, they buy into what you guys do, and you got a great team, man. And
there's a great balance of intensity, humor, and knowing how to work with each other, you know. And what Chief does great is, yes, for everybody's opinion, everybody gives their opinion. He goes and gets a quick workout in, comes back, and he gives us the plan. And the plan works. And his consistency and his message of what he believes in is why our team plays so hard consistently.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I love to hear that. And you know, I know Chief. I had a chance to play under him as an assistant and briefly as a head coach with the Phantoms. And you kind of alluded to it, but you know, Chief he's obviously got the street cred because of his background as a tough guy. But I feel like he just commands respect in a very like humble way, right? It's just like he wants to communicate, he wants to be honest, and all he expects in return is hard work, which is a simple fundamental. But I think you said it, humor, and you don't hear about many coaches talking about that in the locker room, but it's such an important ingredient when you're trying to create chemistry within a team, right? You got to stay loose, and if your head coach is serious but also you know, has a real humorous side to him, and obviously the assistants do too. You create a culture of winning by, you know, obviously sticking to the game plan, hard work. But I mean, you got the most
having fun.
You're having fun, and that's what at the end of the day, it's what it's still all about, even though it's a business.
Absolutely. You know, as you know, Riley and Nasty, 82 games, there's a grind. You're going to go through 4-5 game unbeaten streaks, and hopefully you're going to have 8 game win streaks, right, you know, and we've had both this year, and the ability to laugh together. And that's with the players too, you know, like they want to know too. You walking around or skating around before morning skate, you want to talk to them as people. It's not always about, hey, I need you to do this. It's a conversation of how you doing, how was dinner last night, and then also, and being able to talk from there about what we need to do, what they see about the team we're playing that evening. And I think that all stems. It comes from the culture created by Chief. He does a fantastic job of making everyone feeling included, but they know what they have to do to earn ice time for him. And we know as a staff what he wants for us to get to our identity as a team. So we are always preparing with the idea of, you know, this is what this Chief believes in, so this is how we're going to do things.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. It's super important to have that type of communication and leadership. Did you have a chance to cross paths with Chief when you played for the Flyers in your, you know, 13-14 games?
My best Chief story was when I played games for the Flyers, I think Chief was not in Philly, but we signed him in the offseason, and we're doing the we're up in Peterborough, because Roger Nielsen was the coach running training camp at the time, God bless his soul.
Yeah.
And we had to do a bike test, and we had just won the AHL Calder Cup championship in 98 the year before. So we all knew each other, and it went in alphabetical order. We got six guys together and we started doing like the Tour de France where, you know, we're like doves flying. We went one guy taking the headwind and we just keep rotating, and we caught up to everyone. We caught up, like I'm an M. Montgomery, yeah. We caught up to Chief's a Berube beast. So we caught up to him and I said, hey, just follow in behind, and we all take turns, you know, leading. Well, Chief never led once. He just cruised. And then, and of course, no one's saying anything.
Right, to him. Right.
And then in the last 2 miles, he's all fresh. He took off and dusted us and beat us by 2 minutes.
Come on, no way. That's hilarious.
It's a cagey veteran move.
Yeah, right. That is. Yeah, lay in the weeds, conserve your energy, and then
I forgot about that. He was in Peterborough there. I forgot about that. That's awesome. We had a camp there. It was a long week.
Oh yeah.
I'll put it that way. Yeah. Well, we drove up with the gear, Monty, for that. I don't know if you remember that, but we had to drive up there to Peterborough. But anyway.
That's back when training camps were training camps.
Exactly. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some serious work.
Yeah. A lot of guys came to got in shape at camp back, you know.
Well, it wasn't a Billy Barber.
Right, yeah, yeah, right. It wasn't that bad, but
we did have Rod Brindamore.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. God. Dude. Oh my God, he was unbelievable. He still is. Rod the Bod, still jacked.
Yeah, best year coach.
He's better shaped than anybody on his team, I think. But going back, Monty, a little bit, back to the Phantom days. So what a fun run that was. And he played with Frankie Bylaws, the Animal.
Oh, yeah.
Dave McIsaac, you played college with a little bit. Talk about those days a little bit, Monty. Like they were, you know, we won a championship, man. It's American League, but it's a championship, and it was like one of the best times of my life, that's for sure.
Yeah, it was an incredible time, as you know. I mean, we sold out the last couple of games when we won, and it was the first championship in Philadelphia, I think, since the Phillies had won,
right,
in the mid '80s or early '80s. So to the city of Philadelphia. But, you know, anytime you win together, you know, like we have that text thread going that's, you know, involves Neil Little, and you talked about Frankie and Dave, but we got Johnny Stevens who's gone on. And you look at the people from that team and what they've done in their careers afterwards, you know, people that have gone on and had success in hockey, out of hockey. Because when you're in that kind of culture that, you know, Billy Barber created for us, Mike Stothers, you look at him doing a great job in Anaheim right now as an assistant coach, one of the top penalty kills in the league. You know, I think successful people, when you're around them, everybody gets better.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's that mastermind mentality, right? It's like you're surrounding yourself with successful people, and naturally that success is contagious, right? And I think, you know, I guess if you're in a losing culture too often too, maybe you're start taking some of that vibe with you. Hopefully not, but absolutely. It's nice to see that success transition into the real world, right? I mean, it's after you're done playing and coaching and all the other business stuff that guys get into. But I did want to. You mentioned John Stevens. I mean, Johnny was probably my biggest fan outside of Paul Holmgren, and probably the one of the main reasons I ever stepped foot on the ice with a Flyers jersey on. But you obviously have a great relationship with him. Was he a player's assistant at the time with the Phantoms?
No, he was not the quite. Captain.
He was the
year.
Captain at the time.
He got hurt the next year.
Yeah. But I know you were head coach in Dallas, and he was an assistant for you. So you obviously have a great relationship with Johnny. Can you talk to Johnny and his character and his passion for the game? Because I don't think many Flyers fans understand how much energy and emotion this guy pours into his preparation.
Yeah, Johnny's an incredible human being, you know, caring, thoughtful, extremely intelligent, and his work ethic's off the charts. Mm-hmm. And he cares about people first. And I think that's when players play for him, they don't get to understand that right away. But over time, they quickly get to understand how much he cares about the development of the player and the person. And when I got to Dallas, you know, Johnny, someone, when I got my first head job in USHL at a junior level, I went and spent 3 days at Johnny's place down at the shore. And he went over everything that he had done in his career You know, and what helped him the most in his first head coaching job with the Phantoms, going from an assistant to a head job. I then drafted his son that summer, John Jr.
Okay.
And John played for me in Dubuque. We won a championship together. I recruited Nolan to try to get him to go to Denver, but being the great family that the Stevens family is, you know, Stacy and John wanted their boys to play together at Northeastern, and they had a great time there. And then when I had the opportunity to work with John, whether that was being an assistant for John or the way it worked out in Dallas, I always wanted that opportunity. We see the game very similar and yet different. And that's what you need, you know, for guys to see differently, but at the same time have the same values and what you believe in. And John Stevens is one of my best friends, and I'm very lucky to have worked with him in as a player and as a coach.
Yeah. Beautiful. He always I love Johnny. We talk about Johnny a lot, but you're right, Monty. You hit the nail on the head there with that. Just going back quickly, Riggs, Monty threw up 29 points in 20 games on that run.
Not bad.
Guy had a set of mitts on him, but
Some serious numbers in America.
I have player. Dinner with Manny when I go to Winnipeg all the time.
Yeah, you know, I see.
Mike Manilek won the he was the MVP of the Calder Cup team.
Yeah, that there are a few of you guys that, I mean, Manny was, he was on fire too. Winnipeg boy.
Yeah, right.
But Litz was awesome. You were awesome. I think you had back-to-back hat tricks. Didn't you throw back-to-back hat tricks up in Roch?
Yeah, in our first round in Roch. That's a good memory on you.
Yeah. How do you forget that, man? I mean, like, that was, to me, I'm like, back-to-back hatties, boys.
Yeah, it's impressive.
I didn't have a hat. I would have thrown one out because we were on the road when you did it, too, so which is even more impressive. But, Monty, one real quick question. I got to go back to Pembroke Lumber Kings. You played there. Okay, dude, you had 154 points in one season. I want to know who the fuck was Brian Downey. This guy threw up 172 points. Who is this guy? Where the fuck did he go, man? Seriously, I'm looking through your stuff, man.
Brian actually played the year before with Peter White, who we all know was on our Calder Cup team.
Yeah,
great player.
Yeah,
and Peter White put up like 210 points the year before.
Oh, wow. Like,
with Brian Downey. Downs actually went to Maine with me.
Okay.
And signed as a free agent with Ottawa. Played a little bit in the American League, but never really. I think he played one NHL game.
Oh, he did get a game. Okay.
Yeah, I think he got one game. That's when Ottawa was an expansion team.
Yeah.
And they were getting beat by a touchdown every night, so I think they didn't really a chance.
I saw that. I'm like, man, I got to ask Monty who this guy is because I don't ever remember anything else. but your main days, you go in that you guys national champions in 93? I think it was 93.
Yeah.
You guys won a national championship. 42-1-2. Man, like, talk about a winning tradition or winning
year. Not a
year.
Bad season.
Like, when you lost, were you shocked? And who beat you?
Yeah.
Who did you lose
shocked.
To?
It still bothers me that we lost. It probably helped us to be tougher mentally down the stretch. But I think we were 33-0-2 when we lost to BU. And the funny thing about that game is we were up 6-2 with 4 minutes left in the second. And BU was our biggest rival at the time. And we wanted to beat them 12-2. We wanted to embarrass them. And we gave up a couple of odd man rushes. All of a sudden it was 6-4. And they ended up beating us overtime. Everybody thinks it helped us. I just would have loved to have an unbeaten season.
Because
it's so hard to do. But when you have goalies like Mike Dunham and Gar Snow, you had a chance to win every night.
You guys probably didn't have much fun there.
Not at all. It was a very strict school.
Yeah, we had Mac on a while back, Big Mackers, and I don't know if you saw him. He's head coach in the Federal League in Danbury, and he just and he calmly walked off the bench the other day at the end of the game and went into a scrum and grabbed a guy and tried to throw him. He got suspended. It was fun. He sent me the video. I have to send it to you, Bonnie. It's so funny. He just calm and cool walks off the bench right into the pile and grabs a guy. He goes, they don't take kindly to that.
No.
Even in this league.
He's still in the league.
Federal league. But, Mac, we had Mac tell the story of walking around with, like, Jim Cornette with his tennis racket. you know, after he had gotten involved with a football player's girlfriend. Yeah. And he was worried about getting jumped. He said he fought the one guy or something. I can't remember exactly what he said, but he had a tennis racket with him a lot. I said,
I do remember the fight he got hit with a football player. And, you know, Mac did well.
Yeah. He's a tough, fucker, he's a big man. Dude. The diamond, you know, diamond cutter. Yeah, diamond cutter.
Oh, that nose never got broken shows how good a fighter he is.
Yeah, I know, right? Man. That's a good point.
And he fought tough guys. I mean, he was the legit, big boys, too. Like, he really did. But we had a tough team. We had everything with the Phantoms there. It was a fun time, man. One of my best years ever.
Hey, Monty, I was going to say, just building off your college there, you know, 4 years, and just significant numbers, right, building off your year in Pembroke, but undrafted, and this is, I thought this was pretty fascinating, that you played 67 games the following year in the NHL, not being drafted in first year pro. That's pretty impressive, being a smaller guy, and, you know, you're obviously a skill guy. To talk about that year, I mean, transitioning from college and having success to pro, and then finding your way to playing that many games in your first pro season.
Yeah, I mean, I was lucky to sign. I never thought, not being drafted, you know, being a little short stump that I am, that I would never play pro, you know. So then I got an opportunity, lucky, again, successful teams breed success. So we went at Maine, and I had a few teams interested in signing me. I thought the Blues gave me the best opportunity. They had just gone through a stretch where they hadn't had a first-round pick because of some free agent signing. So they needed some prospects, and I thought that was the best opportunity to get to the NHL. Made the team out of camp. Had a really good camp, and then didn't start off the season well. Was sent down to the minors for a month, did well down there, and came back up, and then got some opportunity to play more minutes. And I was very lucky to be around a lot of really good players. And, you know, Bob Berry was our coach. He gave me an opportunity for a while because we made a couple of trades, and we were I was all of a sudden the number two center behind Craig Janney. So I got a chance to play with Brett Hull for about 15 games. And I think that's where I got all my numbers. I just gave him the puck.
Yeah, right.
Here you go, Holly. He's shooting, right? He's shooting, Monty.
Well, it was a great experience, you know, like, as you know, Riley, whether you're coming from junior college or Europe, the NHL is the greatest league in the world. And you have to learn how to play well in whatever your role is. You got to know how to be a great teammate. You got to understand your role and how do you manage the puck? How do you defend well just in order to buy more minutes and get out there again?
Yeah. Yeah, I know it is challenging, right? Especially when you're such a go-to guy at a junior level or a college level, right? Where you're just thrown on the ice to produce, and then all of a sudden, you know, at the pro level, there's obviously more coaching and more refinement around positioning and the intangibles and all that good stuff. But, you know, good on you for stepping in there, even, you know, in the situation that St. Louis is in at the time, that you're able to identify your weaknesses and find your way. Because that's impressive. And that goes back to showing you the opportunities that arise from being undrafted, too, is you're actually able to sometimes pick your opportunities based on openings and opportunities, right? Because if you're hemmed in a different organization, you might never have had that opportunity to step in and get that many NHL games, especially your first year pro. So a lot of variables there, obviously, but you did what you needed to, and you were committed to the system and to play 67 games not by accident.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it was it was a great time. And as you know, you really appreciate it when you're in the NHL. It's what everybody dreams of doing.
Yeah.
And I think going to college extends a lot of guys that opportunity to be a free agent. And if you do well in college, maybe you'll have an opportunity to sign with an NHL team and earn your way into the league. But the great things you remember about overcoming adversity, and I know Riley, you've been through it, and Nasty, I know you've been through it, whether it's as an athlete or in life, the more you grow and learn from previous experiences, good and bad, it just makes you better in life. And yep. I think that, you know, being a 23-year-old free agent coming out of college, having had the experience of getting passed over in many drafts, not even being thought of, you know, that just, when you overcome those kind of things to be able to get to the greatest league in the world, it's an achievement, and it helps grow the fiber within yourself to be successful at anything you put your mind to.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I had this conversation the other day with someone else just about how adversity builds character, right? And it's like anybody that's known someone that's had an easy path, it just doesn't necessarily work out. And it seems like the ones that struggle the most and have the most adversity are able to kind of find different layers of success or different dimensions of success, and they're always attributed it to the adversity, right? It's not supposed to be easy,
but that's how we become strength. He's the best example.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's a good point.
Yeah, that's the truth. So but good on you. I mean, it's I always like love picking guys' brains on the psychology of it all, because everyone's has it obviously a different path, but you know, to find your way like that in a situation like that is unique. And you're obviously a coachable guy. You're always a student of the game, right? I mean, I'm not sure when you decided you wanted to be a coach, but it sounds like you are or always were a coachable guy.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some coaches that would disagree that coach me.
some nights Billy didn't like anything anyone would do. Monty's your favorite tonight. He's not the next night. That's how Billy was, though. I told a story, Monty. Sorry, I don't mean to get away from your question about Mac. Billy was always all over Mac until we played in the second round. Mac was on fire against Hershey. Remember, he had all those points, and then Mac took a puck to the face, and for the first time in 2 years, he was worried about Mac. He's like, I heard him on the phone. He's on the phone going, we lost our best player. Oh, he's our best player now? Fucking Mac Hershey fucking yell at the guy every goddamn night. He just gets so mad at him. It was so funny. But anyway, I didn't mean to take away from that question, Ryle. Sorry. You're a coachable guy.
Wanting to be a coach is something that I think I wanted to do since I was in high school. Like, I loved always being part of a team and also always wondering how you'd put the parts together. I remember, you know, reading Scotty Bowman books or any books I could get my hands on. I like coaches from all different sports. So it's something that when I volunteered at Notre Dame, you know, and spent a year with no income, just we're living there and trying to learn. I learned under a great coach, Jeff Jackson, and to learn the work ethic, because as a player, you always think, well, okay, coaching, you're going to do this. You're going to put these pieces together, and it's going to be easy to get the players to understand your vision of how you want them to play. And then you get there and you learn it takes a lot of work, and you got to learn how to create a language that's cohesive and easy for the players to understand and also visualize on the ice. And then working with players one-on-one, getting them to relish their role on the team, all that stuff, you find out quickly whether you love it or whether it's not for you. And I'm very fortunate and grateful for that year at Notre Dame. And that's what let me know that's coaching is what I want to do for my living.
That's awesome. Yeah. Who would you say your biggest influence was in coaching? I only have maybe half of your coaches written down here, but you know, Terry Murray, Bill Barber, you mentioned, and several others. I think Daryl Sutter, and you know, a ton of big name in the coaching world. Would you say any one of those was your biggest influence, or maybe the guy you mentioned as far as the head coach you worked under there?
Yeah, well, I think for sure Billy Barber was probably at the pro level the biggest influence. Very similar to what I see with Chief, you know, like, and I think that's part of the Flyer culture, right? From Bobby Clark and Paul Holmgren. It's like, and you guys know that better than I do because you guys were there longer than I was. But, you know, you man up, you work hard. You know, you're being paid for results, but your effort day in, day out, the respect you have and you get from your teammates and being a great teammate, those are the things that I remember learning from Billy Barber. really well. I think my coaches in college probably had the biggest impact on X's and O's on me and individual teaching. Grant Stambrook is someone that recruited guys like Gary Suter and Chris Chelios and Mike Richter and Tony Granato and Scott Mellenby at Wisconsin, then recruited great players like Snow, Dunham, Korea at Maine. And he was a great one-on-one teacher. I remember when I was a head coach in Dubuque, I hired Grant to come in 1 week a month, and he'd come in, and we had Johnny Goudreau was one of our and Goudreau was, you know, we signed him as a free agent because we were allowed to do that as an expansion team. We're supposed to, Northeastern said, you're going to have him for 3 years. Like, it's going to take a while for Johnny to grow and to learn and produce at the junior level. And he comes in, he's rookie of the year. He's in playoff scoring, leads us to a championship. And I remember Grant working with him and trying to teach him new moves. He goes, this guy's like a sponge. I show him something one time, he goes out and does it in a game and scores a goal. But, you know, working with people like that, and then I got to say it, at the coaching level, you know, I think John Stevens has probably had the biggest impact on me. You know, just spending so much time talking to him on the phone. And then I've been fortunate, like here with Chief and Steve Ott, Mike Van Ryan and the staff here, I've learned so much more. Rick Bonus at the NHL level, great human being that was really, you know, knew the NHL so well and helped me organize scheduling and, you know, dealing with players and, you know, when to push, when not to push. You know, there's all kinds of people like that in my life that I'm very fortunate to have taken little bits and pieces from to be able to create your own style and your own energy and how you're going to approach players.
Yeah, I was going to ask you something about that, Monty. So we can't overlook the fact that you won a national title as a head coach at Denver. I don't know. I've never been in the room with you while you were coaching, only when you were playing, and it was a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun. But no, seriously, like, you do have a great sense of humor, and you're a great dude to be around. But at the college level, like, Did you use the humor with the kids, or because you're probably around them a lot, right? More than pros are around their coaches and stuff like that.
Yeah, at the college level, like, you recruit these kids, you bring them into your program, you get to know their families, and then when they come in, now you start coaching them, and they get to know you as a coach first. And then they get to know you as a person, because you do spend a lot of time with them. And, like, you know, example, like a guy like Will Butcher that I had, like, you get invited to their weddings, you go to their weddings. Troy Terry is someone that, you know, when I got to Denver at 15 years old, he's already committed. And then he gets there at 18, he wins the World Juniors, he wins a national champ, going to his wedding this summer. Oh, that's, you know, awesome. That's a special thing that you get in college. And then when you move to pro, I think you can have that same balance, but I do still think it's very important that you get to know your players as people.
Yeah,
that you be able to laugh with them, that you be able to have honest and hard conversations, and then also for them to be able to feel comfortable sharing with you. And that's when I think you really gain trust, is when a player comes to you and not always you going to them, and they want to talk, and it might be hockey, but it might not be hockey, you know? Right. And that's where, as a coach, you know that you've gained their trust. And that's the most important thing, is that as a coach, everyone talks about a player has to gain a coach's trust, but it's got to work the other way for it to be a special relationship.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And, you know, you've been coaching, I think, almost 17 years now. And obviously the game has evolved and the philosophy around coaching has evolved, specifically around the element of communication. Where did you see that evolve? You know, you go from, like, the old school way where you didn't even talk to your coach. It's almost like it was a good thing if you didn't hear from him, because you're probably going to get sent down or you'd be scratched. To now, it's like, who did we talk to the other day? Andy Delmore is like, you have to be a good communicator with your players. When did you notice that being a thing, or does it just kind of, like, evolve slowly and you just kind of, like, worked with it?
Well, I think communication's always been a strength of mine.
Yeah.
I think the thing you learn as you evolve as a coach is it's more important to listen mm-hmm. than it is to tell people how much you know. Listening to your players, especially about what makes them tick and what they value, helps you, you know, to be able to develop them to their strengths and also address their weaknesses.
Yeah, that's it makes a ton of sense. Listening is the mother skill, right? I mean, and players want to be heard, right? They want to feel like they're part of the equation, not just being told what to do. So I agree with that. You know, I've seen it. I was coaching the Phantoms for 7 years, and, you know, I think a lot of these players just want a sounding board. They just want to kind of get something off their chest and be heard. And then whether, you know, that translates or not, they at the end of the day, they still feel like they've communicated what's on their heart. But yeah, the listening is huge, because nothing worse than a coach when you want to go talk to him and he just talks over you and you don't listen. You know, you walk out and you're scratching your head and be like, what the hell was that all about? But
yeah, and that's it is. I mean, I remember my uncle, who was an agent for a while, told me there's a reason why God gave you 2 ears and 1 mouth, because it was twice as much. I was a yappy SOB when I was a kid.
Not you. No way. Oh, that's great. Monty, so when you're a college coach, I mean, you basically have those, like, you're the boss, like, no matter what, right? Like, that's what I would think. But, like, you come into the NHL as a head coach, now you got these, you know, you played with big-time players. That's one thing you got to get to about a little nickname.
Oh, yeah.
You come in as a head coach now, you're a new head coach, and you got Jamie Benn in your locker room, you know, Tyler Seguin, and, like, what was your approach there? Like, because it's got to, like, be something you're thinking about going in and taking that job.
Yeah, it is. And I think my mode of communication that I brought, you know, that's just the way I work, is I try and get to know them. And I mean, you'd have to ask them, but I think at the beginning, they hadn't experienced maybe a coach that, and I think they thought that I wanted to be friends. I'm not opposed to being friends with my players. That wasn't the goal. It was to get to know them, get to know what makes them tick. And I think over time, there was a respect that grew. I know on my part, there was a tremendous amount of respect, especially with my relationship with Jamie Benn and, you know, the Tyler Seguins and Klingbergs of the world that were our leaders. And I think it trickled down to being able to develop a relationship with everybody, you know, to be able to make someone understand whether they played 8 minutes or 18 minutes, the value that they brought to our team. And I think it took a while. It took longer, I thought, than I wanted it to. I thought by Thanksgiving I'd be able to be there, but it actually took to the All-Star break. And then I think our team took off, and, you know, we had a great run. And if it wasn't for the St. Louis Blues being so good and the Chiefs team, maybe it would have been us going all the way to Stanley Cup Finals.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing you learn at the pro level is being able to be fair and firm. You know, with players, they respect that, and being, you know, holding people accountable. Like, there's sometimes where a guy like Jamie Benn isn't playing well and his 18 minutes get trimmed down to 15. There's a message sent there, that players understand that they need to be better every night. And in the end, I think every player wants to win. So if they're having an off night, which everybody has off nights, and you give someone that's on the third line more opportunity to help you win that night, I think there's a lot of respect given towards the coaching staff on what you're trying to accomplish, as the team's the most important thing.
100%. Yeah. And everybody on that bench notices that too, right? If you keep playing a guy that's having an off night, it's not showing that, that element of accountability, in the sense that everybody is on the same, you know, field here. Everyone is the same, even though their roles are different. And if Jamie Benn's not going, well, we have to send a message and, you know, trim the minutes down and get someone that's going tonight. But everybody notices that, which if you just ignored that, everyone would notice that as well. And again, you kind of lose some street cred in the sense that, well, you're being hard on these guys, but not these guys. And I remember when was it Dale Hunter was in was in Washington. It was like, how do you work with Ovechkin, you know, and how do you work with his, obviously his skill and his enthusiasm and energy, but also send the team message. And I think, you know, where Nasty was going with the question really was just like, you know, the differences of personalities in that locker room, superstars versus, you know, fourth liners. And it sounds like you have to treat them all the same, even though they're all different personalities. Everyone's got a different personality. You treat them a little bit differently. But at the end of the day, whether you're the first PP unit or, you know, again, fringe guy, all you expect is the work, the effort, and then if it's not going, you're sending the message irregardless. Is that fair to say that you treat them all somewhat the same, so everyone notices that?
I think you treat everyone fairly. You can't treat everybody the same because of their roles are different. But I think it's important that everyone feels valued and they know that what the coach wants from them. And that you're going to communicate to them. I remember learning a great lesson from Corey Perry one time, because it was a game that we ended up, that we won, and their line had played well, but just with the way the matchups went, his line got short-suited probably about 3 minutes. And he just came to me the next day and wanted to know why. And, you know, and I hadn't noticed, because we had won, that I had, you know, not played them as much. And it was a good lesson for me. Like, okay, well, those, you got to watch those minutes. And then guys that didn't get their minutes, go and communicate to them why it was. And it was just a matchup thing. It wasn't anything with their performance. It's just the other team wasn't playing the line that I had them matched up against. So I was rolling with my matchups because it was working for us. But things like that, you learn and you grow as a person. And that's evolving as a coach. And, you know, just getting back to Jamie Benn, like that's a great captain, because I remember I used him in some shutdown roles some nights against certain opponents, and he sacrificed offense. That's a guy who will sacrifice as a leader to try and win. And you're very fortunate when you're a coach and you have someone that's a leader like that to lead everybody else.
Yeah, 100%. Makes your job a lot easier, doesn't it?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, we were, you know, it would be tough to go to the rink every day, almost like butting heads with the captain, right? Because he thinks differently, or he's not accepting of the roles you're giving him and whatnot. But yeah, I would imagine it certainly makes the job easier.
You there, Monty? Oh yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
So Monty, I was looking at something and I thought I knew basically your history as far as playing, but I noticed, well, I couldn't believe it. You played in Missouri. You and Scott Mellenby were there together.
Mellenby was an assistant coach,
and you were player assistant
for part of the season. Yeah,
I had a gentleman call in. I'll just play just a quick second of it, and you see if you know who it is.
Well, you know, I was in. Missouri with the River Otters there, and
Killer Kaminsky.
It's our buddy Dexter who imitates him. So Killer's nephew. I FaceTime Dex. He's the equipment guy. He's an equipment guy in Orlando. Good friend of ours, Adam Dexter. And but he just listened.
Just a fucking great, great guy, Jimmy. I loved having you there, and
that's a great. You know, just, oh my god, I still talk to Killer. He's coaching in the SJ, Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League, I believe. That's where he's at right now. Wonderful human being,
Dex. Dex, when he worked with me for a little bit when I was with the Flyers, he was with the Phantoms, and he worked with Killer, so he's like really good friends with him, talks to him all the time, and he's doing the imitation. Chief hears him, goes, oh my god, he's like, I thought that was Killer out in the hallway talking. He's like, that's unbelievable. I showed his nephew the same. I had FaceTime with him, but he used to, one of the funniest things he said, that Killer would always, after the games, he'd be like, boys, we're just going through the fucking emotions out there, the emotions instead of the motions. And we just used to die, man, when he would do that.
Well, my favorite Billy Barber line would be, when there's some nights in the American League you're playing 3-3 and you don't have a lot of motion, you don't have a lot of energy. And he's like, They're playing like men. We're playing like boys. We're flat as piss on a plate.
Yeah.
That's pretty flat.
That's pretty real damn flat. And they're and it, you know, and the, now that you say that, Monty, they were running through us like shit through a goose too. You remember that one? He used to say that one all the time too. He had his he had a
and
few.
Always like always scratching his ear too as he's delivering yeah. the line. He, what a funny man.
Oh, he was great, man. He was so good. That's funny though.
I had some for you, Monty. I was reading up on you before we hopped on this morning, and I found a little tidbit of information. And I didn't realize you were credited for nicknaming Lindros, LeClaire, and Renberg the Legion of Doom. How did that go down?
You know, well, so I get moved from Montreal to Philly with LeClaire, Desjardins, and Gilbert Dion. And we get there, and that line, I think their first game, they didn't get a point, but they had all kinds of chances. And then after that, they started scoring three goals a game. And it's about 2 weeks later, and we're in the old Flyers training center in Voorhees. And reporter Les, I'm forgetting Les's last name, he's going around the rink, and he's talking about the dominance of this big physical line. And one of my close friends growing up in Montreal, Tommy, who I played in the Quebec Major Junior League, was a good hockey player, loved the Flyers growing up. I was a Habs fan. We'd always go head-to-head every time the Flyers and Habs. And that brawl yeah. of 80, what was it, 86 or 87?
Yeah, I think 86.
Remember that brawl?
Yes.
Chris Cross came out in his flip-flops.
Yeah, Doug Cross came out in his flip-flops. My dad's trying Dylan to
Brownie came out, too.
Yeah, Brownie had no
shoulders. Brownie and Nylon are going at it.
Just scratches on his back. He had nothing. He just had suspenders on his pants. Yeah. It's a fucking unbelievable, man.
So, anyways, Tommy was a huge flyer. He goes, talking to me, he goes, that line can't be stopped. I'm like, Tommy, they're so big. They're so strong. They're so skilled. You're doomed. Like, I don't know who can stop them. And Tommy was a big wrestling fan. He goes, it's the Legion of Doom. So I said that to the guy, and then he put it in the paper, and it just took off.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And they were, and then, you know, they were the Legion of Doom. And then a few years later, as we told Johnny, when John LeClaire was on the show there, were you aware that there was another Legion after you guys, and it was the Legion of Poon? And, which was Uppy, Scotty Upshaw, Joffrey Lupo, Richie, and Karch. You know, they were all young kids, and they were just lighting Philadelphia up at that time. And I said, he goes, and he, you know, Johnny's like pretty serious. He starts laughing. He goes, I wasn't aware of that.
Johnny wouldn't be aware of that.
Yeah, exactly, right? It was pretty funny, though. I had a quick question, Monty. I was just thinking about this. You know, obviously, you speak French. I was telling Ryle, so he grew up, his dad's French, but like guys didn't know that he could speak it. So did you ever catch anyone, like players or anybody, like saying something in French they didn't know you spoke French? Because we had that happen with Randy Jones, remember?
All right, yeah.
Danny Briere and Simone Gagné were speaking French, and he asked, when you were in the room too at that time, mm-hmm. and he understood them. It was nothing bad. It was just they were just talking in French, and Randy actually answered the question, and they both whipped their head around, and they're like, you speak French? You know, like, and he's like, yeah, I played where he played the
queue.
But Randy Jones, you wouldn't expect him to start throwing out, you know, like fluent French. But I just wondered if you ever caught anyone like that.
No, I never have. Probably because when I first get somewhere, like, here in St. Louis, for example, you know, we have a first round pick in Bull Duke. It's going to be a real good player. But, you know, guys like David Perron and Sammy Blay was here last year. I go and speak French to them right away, let them know. And they're always shocked because my last name is Montgomery. I have no idea. I was born in Montreal, you know. And then you joke around with those players, and it's a good way to get players to feel, I guess, relaxed around you when you first meet them as a coach.
Yeah, for sure.
That's interesting.
Well, Monty, listen, man, I can't tell you how thankful we are that you joined us. You guys are sitting at second in the Central. Good luck to you, man, and we do appreciate your time, brother.
Well, Nasty Riley, I really appreciate you guys having me on. I've listened to your podcast. You guys do a great job, and hopefully you get some ratings with my fat ball.
Oh, yeah, we will. We will for sure. Go in there. I dare you to go in the Chiefs office and smack him right in the back of the head. Just tell him it's from Riles, just in case. Oh man, I bet you guys.
I'm gonna tell him how you imitated him. No, yeah. Chuckle out of that,
big boy. He used to do it. Oh yeah, we'd be sitting in the hot tub before we go for a run, and he'd look over and goes, "Do you understand how tough I am?" I'm like, "Yeah, I know how tough you are." Well, I'm not gonna fight. You might want to tell the boys in there today how, you know, I'm the toughest guy in the building. You go upstairs and tell that Homer too. I'll knock them right to my, oh yeah. You know, just a lip off. Just a lip off, you know.
He does brag about your basketball skills. And he says Homer was smart. He always took you on his team.
Yeah, you should have seen.
Nasty's Chief. A ringer.
Chief was fun to play basketball with. Oh, lumbering around.
Oh yeah.
Fucking elbows.
Well, setting up picks.
Setting picks. Shoot. Never jumped when he shot, just threw it. Yeah. No. But hey, it was a good workout, and you couldn't say no to Homer, right? No one, everyone would be like trying to sneak out at 3 in the afternoon because they knew he was coming down. It'd be 100 degrees outside in the middle of the summer. You're like, no, man, no. But anyway, man, thanks again, Monty, dude. Miss you, bro. Hopefully get to see you sometime soon. I don't know if you guys are coming to Philly. Chief was saying that might have got rearranged a little bit.
It did get rearranged, and when we come, we actually it was in the regular schedule to be back to back. We weren't going to have any time, but I think with the new schedule, we actually we're in the night before, so maybe we can grab dinner.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. That'd be awesome. Yeah. Love to see you, man.
Awesome. All right. Appreciate it, Monty.
Say hey to Shedder too for us.
All right,
brother.
All right, see ya. Take care. That episode was brought to you by Myco Tea, Living Mycelium Beverage. Nasty, what do you got going on over there?
I got the Cordyceps here. Gets my energy going a little bit. Awesome. I like the taste of this one the best.
You need more energy, too. So
I do. When I'm needing that energy, I drink it anyway, but it does give me that little lift.
Beauty. Check out Myco Tea at drinkmycotea.com. 12 different strains of mushrooms. Again, Living Mycelium Beverage. Tastes great. High energy, high vibe. DrinkMycoTea.com.
Drink it.
And a big thanks to our friend, Jim Montgomery. Appreciate Monty. The time.
Love him. Such a funny dude, man.
Yeah, what a good dude.
Good coach.
Yeah, amazing amazing story. Yeah. You know, how he's been able to take his college career and find his way to the NHL.
Yep.
He's right out of the gate and been being an impact and obviously found his way in coaching. Obviously, something he loves to do.
Yeah.
Good human.
Yes.
And, doing some amazing things there in St. Louis with our man, Chief.
With Chief and you know, their team. They got a good team, man.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you can't like, not look at them and say they have a shot.
That's
right. They got a pretty good team. And you know, Armstrong, he likes to do things at the deadline, too, to improve the team. And I know after talking to Chief as well, you know, he thinks they'll do something. Obviously, he doesn't know what, but – they've got a good team again. So,
yeah, they do.
You know, I wouldn't, you know, there's favorites on the West, but I put them up there in the top three at least with the teams in the West. So see what happens.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. But appreciate Monty coming on. Episode 58 in the books, Nast.
That's right, baby.
Check us out next week, episode 59. Until then, stay safe, knuckleheads.
See you, knuckleheads.